Welcome to the 13th episode of our 3DS podcast, Actually Why Not? Warum eigentlich nicht? We have the pleasure to exchange with internal and external guests about their career, the key events and their Actually Why Not moments along their career. Besides this, we also reflect together about the value of diversity in their respective environment. Our aim is to raise awareness and to stimulate ideas for different ways to be successful in our business life and also to value diversity. My name is Judith Wallner. I'm hosting this podcast. With me is my colleague and co-host
Lena Jimmo.
We are recording today's episode remotely and have the immense pleasure to welcome a fantastic guest from our Dassault Systèmes headquarters in Paris, Claire Biot, who is Vice President Life Science and Healthcare Industry. Claire joined Dassault Systèmes in March 2019, and since then she is, with her team, responsible for helping companies to digitally transform their approach to scientific innovation. However, this is by far not Claire's only role and mission. She's also a board member of Monarchia Technologies. And as we will learn in some minutes from now, she's also engaged in a mission on the regulation of health product spending nominated by the French Prime Minister, Elisabeth Borne. And Claire will tell us more about that. A warm welcome, Claire. We are highly pleased to have you as guest in our podcast today.
Thank you for having me in that podcast. It's really a great pleasure for me to share that moment with you.
Great. As with every guest, Claire, we'd like to ask you first to summarize the three key milestones in your career so far.
If I have to name three, I think I would say one was when I moved from my PhD in immunology to my first job at the Ministry of Health. I was the head of the health product pricing and reimbursement division. And there, it was my first management experience and I really enjoyed it. So that's the first milestone. Second is becoming the managing director at the Health Products and Equipment Central Agency at Greater Paris University Hospitals. Because being the managing director shows you, like helps you understand what it means to say the boss is alone. Like you really feel that, or lonely. And the third one was when I joined the Dassault Systèmes, I attended the first convention leaders and I realized, like I really came out of that these 3 days with the feeling that everything is possible. You know, we have that value ideas that says, if we show the dream is possible, we can inspire people to create it. And that was really a wow moment for me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So you have that extraordinary and definitely very steep career path, and you've had a lot of top level positions already. You made career at very early stages as well. Claire, were there any disruptions or kind of rejections in your career as well? Something that went differently than planned?
I can name at least two. The first one is when I've gone through an engineering school, École Polytechnique, and there I decided I wanted to work in life sciences and I realized it was important for me to have a PhD. So the first step was to get a Master of Science. And there were two places I considered, EMBL in Germany, in Heidelberg, and a place in the US at Cold Spring Harbor. And I knew Cold Spring Harbor better, but I have a great interview at EMBL. I identified the lab and in which I want to work and the PhD topic. And then I just had to take an exam in biology and I actually failed in that exam. And that was a very tough surprise for me because it was my first failure in any kind of exam. And I was kind of decided to move to Germany for my PhD. Now I have to do the other move and I only have one choice. So it was that's one disruption I can name. The second disruption is actually also linked to my PhD because I was meant to do it in the US at the at Cold Spring Harbor. And during the year there, during my Master of Science, I was not totally satisfied because it was really great academic science, but it was hard for me to connect with applications to the daily life, you know, in medicine. So too basic, not enough turn towards translational medicine. And so that's the second disruption I can name because I was really wondering, do I do my PhD, yes or no? And finally, I decided to move on with a PhD, but to do it at the Institut Pasteur, which is from its beginning, like more than 100 years ago, both a really good place for basic research, but also very interested in translational medicine and applications to the daily life.
Claire, for me, it was also not so long ago that I ventured into the professional life. So what advice would you give to young talents how to achieve their personal goals?
I would have one advice, which is dare to dream big, you know, because any kind of job, I think, is going to have some difficulties. And so you would rather be, you know, managing difficult topics when the purpose is really meaningful and when the goal is, you know, large than on a much more narrow topic. So dare to dream big. And for that, you have to trust yourself.
We'll keep that in mind. Dream big. Great.
Amongst the three factors and moments you were describing, Claire, is there already one who you would consider as the key actually why not moment in your career, as this is the title of our podcast? Or is there another event or opportunity that you would describe as this is one of my key actually why not moments?
I think the second one, because when you have been the head of a small team of 10 people and you move into becoming the managing director of a much larger organization with legal accountability, right, for that team, and you're only 32, like that's really a why not moment, I think.
Didn't you have any doubts or questions or any fears when you took that decision?
So of course I did. What I had learned during my first job at Ministry of Health was you can always rely on a team, right? So it's a matter of understanding the skills that are in the team and how you're going to leverage them. And don't be afraid to say that you don't know. I mean, if you show that you're willing to learn and if you listen to those who know, then you should be able to make well-informed decisions. But yeah, of course, like there were so many things that I was not aware of when I joined. But
super interesting.
Claire, besides that nomination, our research shows that last year you were nominated for the 2022 class of young leaders by the French American Foundation. Can you briefly explain to us what kind of program it is and also to what extent you're currently involved there?
Sure. So that program has been created roughly 40 years ago, and it's a transatlantic leadership program that brings together rising talents from an array of sectors that who have a common link, which is their passion for forging bounds in a globalized world, and that use their influence for that common good. And so you have more than 500 alumni that can cover fighter pilots, diplomats, artists, novelists, entrepreneurs, a very broad scope of alumni. And why was it important for me to be part of that program? Well, Dassault Systèmes is a European company, but we have very close ties to the US in terms of technological innovation and business activity. And so as a young leader, I aspire to broaden my view of that transatlantic cultural and business bonds, build strong relationships with my peers, American and French young leaders, and further enhance my transcultural management skills as a way to serve my ambition for healthier people and a sustainable healthcare system.
Claire, you know that we are always collecting questions from previous guests that we are then asking to the guests of the current session. Today, we've got two questions from previous guests, and both questions are actually connected, and that's why we want to raise both of them. First one is from Holger Schütz. Holger Schütz is the Executive Vice President Human Resources at Rohde & Schwarz.
Dear Claire, I would be interested in how the current megatrends in life science will impact our private life the most and maybe the fastest.
And the second question, as I said, it's a bit linked. Second question is from Andrea Buga. Andrea Buga is Senior Vice President, Head of Defense Solutions at Airbus Defense and Space. And both of you actually met last year at an event, so she was remembering you. Andrea was our guest in podcast session number 11. Her question is,
dear Claire, knowing a bit what you're working on in Dassault Systèmes, I would be very much interested what is your vision of how life science and healthcare will look like in 5 to 10 years?
Thanks for these questions. They actually come together quite nicely. So to Holger's point first, there are quite a few transformations happening from one size fits all to personalized healthcare is one, from treatment to prevention, from fragmented patient journey to coordinated patient journey, from burnt out to augmented physicians, just to name a few. I want to say that to me, the one that's going to reach our private life the fastest is probably the first I mentioned, which is from one size fits all to personalized treatments, because it's actually already happening. So as a patient, more and more what you're going to encounter is that the drug that's going to be prescribed to you is going to be adapted to your individual conditions. It can be you have cancer, and based on the genomic signature of your cancer, you're going to receive drug A or drug B. It could be you need to undergo knee replacement, and the prosthesis you're going to receive will be 3D printed to be adapted to your personalized size. But it will also have a sensor that will send signal about the way you're recovering, so that your recovery plan is going to be adjusted to your individual behavior. So I think we are going to see this more and more, and it's already happening, but I would say precision medicine at scale is what I think will be experienced in our daily life the most easily. And now if I take a step back and I think about what is healthcare in 5 to 10 years from now, I want to keep the lenses of the patient, as Holger invited us to do. And I want to say, well, being healthy in 5 to 10 years actually starts with prevention. It doesn't even start with drugs or devices. It starts by having a personalized food, a healthy lifestyle that is going to help you remain healthy longer. It also comes with continuous monitoring, which means that you can identify if you feel healthy, or you can identify a disease very early so that you can take action early. It also means patients feeling empowered and being involved in any kind of health decision, which also means that the role of the physicians is going to change. They will become health advisors or coaches. Of course, it involves the precision techniques that I have been mentioning in my the other part of my answer. So I can name robotic-assisted surgery. I can name the exponential decrease in the cost of sequencing mRNA vaccines. I mean, we have been exposed to many of them. It means a patient journey that is much less fragmented than today. One important point is also that it means, I think being healthy in 10 years from now means patients will not be a cobaye anymore, if I may say so, or a guinea pig, meaning treatments will be experienced on your virtual twin before the actual treatment is going to apply to the real patient, as a way to ensure that, you know, compare different treatment options and ensure the best outcome for the patient. And finally, it means access to healthcare for all. There is a commitment by United Nations that by 2030, 100% of the worldwide population should have access to essential healthcare. It's roughly 50% as of today.
Super interesting insights, Claire. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us.
Dear Claire, let's move on to another standard part of our podcast, the topic of diversity. Can you briefly explain what role does diversity play in your industry or, let's say, work environment?
So, in our industry, which is the life sciences and healthcare industry, diversity is critical. I want to take one example coming from clinical trials. You know, diversity in terms of sex, age, race, ethnicity is there to guarantee that the trial results can be generalizable to a larger population, right? If you only test a drug for hypertension, for example, in men, does it work in women? Does it work in people of colors? Like, we have different physiologies. So if you want to ensure that the results that you generate through a clinical trial can apply to a broader population, you need to have diversity at the root of your trial. And that's actually a challenge for the industry now. There is strong guidance from regulatory bodies to achieve greater diversity. Just to give you one example, in the US today, racial and ethnic minorities make up 40% of the population, but these populations are really underrepresented in travel.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Claire. The value and importance of diversity are on everyone's lips nowadays. How do you encounter diversity in your everyday life?
So how do I encounter diversity in my everyday life? I would say first within my team. I'm very happy to say we are very well balanced in terms of gender, 50-50. Mm. But of course, diversity is not only about gender diversity. It's also race, ethnicity, age. And to that extent, I'm proud to speak about a promotion I did in my leadership team recently with John. He's based out of the US. And, you know, for me, it's important to show, okay, Dassault Systèmes is a European company. The headquarters is in France, in Vélizy. But yes, you can, you know, have a high responsibility roles and not be based in Vélizy. And the entire leadership team before then was really much Vélizy-centric. I'm also proud to say that we have opened the team to four talents based out of India in the past 18 months, Asia, and we have also hired two very talented colleagues. They live in France, but originally they were from another European country. And so all this brings different perspectives in our discussions, and I think is very important for the team. Now, if I take a step back more broadly within the Dassault system, I would say that it's really transcultural, and for me, it's in particular a lot of interactions with the US. And then the last point I wanted to make, if I think about your question, is to also take the time to think about my previous jobs. And to that extent, at Greater Paris University Hospitals, it was very interesting to see that a lot of managers had climbed up the organizational ladder. So a lot of them have started as a technician in the field, and they had taken up management responsibilities, which I think was bringing quite a lot of diversity in the profiles that I would interact with and in the discussions we would have.
We also have a standard question for every guest, Claire, which is the following. And we ask you to count, please. How many different managers did you have in your career? How many of them were women? How many of them were men? How many of them were younger than you? And did you perceive any differences?
That's an interesting question. So if I compute well, I've had six managers. Four of them were females and two were males. Is there a different management style? I'm not sure, to be honest. Maybe females would be more empathetic, but it has also varied. Like if I think about the four female managers I've had, they each had a different management style. So I don't want to make it too general. The one comment I can make is when I hired, and actually that's back to one of the previous questions you asked, at Greater Paris University Hospitals, in my leadership team, it was eight men and one woman. And then seven plus two. And then there was some mobility in the team, and I interviewed several candidates, and I hired a third woman. And it came to, like, for me, I thought, oh, it's going to change the pace of the discussions we have in our leadership management meetings every week. And it was very true. And it's hard to say exactly why, but it's just like really, again, about how we each of us perceive things and would, you know, take position when listening to topics, to problems that arise. And so, again, I think having all these different ways of perceiving problems and understanding them and solving them is really a great way to build value for the team. Now, if I come back to your question, so four women, two men, none of them were younger than me.
Thank you very much for having done the calculation. And we are, you know, we are doing our own non-scientific statistics on that question. So we come to the guessing question. Claire, we have a guessing question for you in the context of diversity. Each year, the World Economic Forum is calculating the so-called global gender gap, which identifies the differences between men and women in the areas of economics, participation and equal opportunities, education, health and politics. And they are ranking roughly 150 companies, and they are rating 150 countries according to that specific index. And a low score indicates that in that specific country, there's low gender equality. A high score, and 100 points is the maximum, a high score indicates that there is 100% equality between the genders with regards, as I said, participation and equal opportunities, education, health, politics, and economics. Now we have read the benchmarking 2022, so from last year. Our question to you is, what do you guess? What is the overall average across all these countries, about all the 146 countries, with regards to that global gender gap?
Yeah, I would have said something between like 40 and 50, 45.
Got very good news for you and for us. It's higher than 50. This average is 68.1.
Good. Okay.
Now, you're from France. We are from Germany. What do you guess? What is Germany? Where are Germany and France sitting in that ranking compared to that ranking, the global ranking of that 146 countries?
I would expect they would be above average, both of them. I would expect France a bit higher than Germany, because my understanding of the way Germany handles actually kindergarten, like the look after young children, makes it very difficult for women to have a stable career. So then I would expect that to have an impact on the ranking.
Both countries are pretty equal, actually. Germany even 1 point higher than France, 80.1, and figuring on number 10 on that ranking list. France 79.1, which is equal to position number 15, so very, very close. This was the last question we absolutely wanted to ask, and I would like to raise the question of Nina. Nina was our guest in podcast number 10. Nina is the co-founder of Female Founders, and Female Founders is an organization that promotes the female startup ecosystem in Europe. She's herself coming from the startup scene. And she's also executive board member of the Austrian Private Equity and Venture Capital Organization.
Hi, Claire. Coming from the startup community myself, I have one big question I would love to raise today. If you were a founder in the life science space, which problem would you like to solve?
So that's a great question. I think one easy answer for me would be, you know, as I come from the life sciences background, a PhD in immunology, it would be like, oh yeah, I take a new molecule that seems to be exciting and I try to turn it into a meaningful drug or device. But now if I take a step back and I think as an individual, what is the most frustrating for me when I, you know, have a healthcare experience, it's to see how fragmented the patient journey is and how difficult it is to get my, you know, data in a way that is meaningful, that can be shared across the healthcare ecosystem. So I think I would go there. From a business model standpoint, it might not be that easy, but I would try to help, you know, really solve that issue of the fragmented patient journey, connect the stakeholders together and provide data back to patients.
Sounds excellent. Thank you very much, Claire. So we are at the end of our podcast recording. It was a wonderful exchange with you, and we thank you so much about that inspiring and that sparkling conversation that we had, three of us, and the insights you shared with us. So thank you very much for your time and for your trust to do that podcast with us. It was a huge pleasure for us. Thank you very much, Claire.
Thank you very much. And, you know, I'm happy if it can help other women think about their career path. It's obviously a pleasure to help them. And of course, they should feel free to reach out to me. And I'm always happy to have a discussion because each of us, you know, we go through doubts, questions, and we can help each other.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.